You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is Wednesday, October 7th, 8:05 Central Time. It is time to study the daily New Testament reading. Our guest pastor joining us by phone this morning, the Reverend Mark Matzke from Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio. Good morning, Pastor Matzke.
Good morning, Andy.
So good to have you as our guest this morning. Looking forward to studying Matthew chapter 9 with you this morning. Tell us about Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio.
Well, we have been here a long time. We were founded in 1844, actually predating the formation of the Missouri Synod, and became part of the German Evangelical Lutheran Synod of Missouri, Ohio, and other states in 1860. And I think what might be of interest to the listeners is the fact that the periodical, The Lutheran Witness, was born right here in Zanesville, Ohio, on May 21st, 1882. The pastor was Dr. C.A. Frank. He actually accepted a call to come here from Capital University in Columbus. And as part of his tenure here, he began editing The Lutheran Witness, which, of course, became the official periodical of our synod. And it almost didn't survive. For the first 9 years, it had some support. There was a group called the Cleveland Pastoral Conference that withdrew financial support, and it almost died right then. But Pastor Frank kept it going almost single-handedly, and there's some archival stuff about folks who would help to write the addresses and fold them up and take them in a wash basket and a wheelbarrow to the post office. So there's some deep history there. In more of our modern day, I think one of the great joys in ministry here at Trinity is our early childhood center. We have more kids than we can accommodate with our physical plant, so that is a very it's something that I enjoy a lot, being able to intersect with families with young children in that way.
Well, thanks be to God for the long history of ministry there at Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio. Now, this is over on the eastern side of Ohio, correct?
That's right. We are just about an hour straight east of Columbus, Ohio, right along I-70.
All right. Very good. Well, we are digging into Matthew chapter 9 today, verses 18 through 38. Pastor Matzke, what would you like for us to know as we prepare to study this text in Matthew 9?
Well, here in Matthew 9, we find Jesus, his public ministry is in full swing at this point, and he's attesting to his divine nature through the performance of many different miracles. The chief ones in this chapter have to do with not just the restoration of health, but the restoration of life. And we're going to see him showing his authority over death itself through various miracles that he performs. And then we'll wrap up with, it's kind of a transitional moment because he's going to start drawing his disciples to himself. In chapter 10, we actually see the disciples named and sent out as apostles. So this is sort of a defining moment in his teaching ministry where he's showing who he is, but now he's also going to involve his disciples in the same mission of going out into the harvest.
We are studying the daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Mark Matzke from Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio. We're in Matthew chapter 9 today, verses 18 through 38. As we're studying along, you're welcome to call or email with comments or questions. The phone number is 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. All right, let's take a look at the text, Matthew chapter 9, beginning at verse 18. While he was saying these things to them, behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live. And Jesus rose and followed him, and with his disciples. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, if I only touch his garment, I will be made well. Jesus turned, and seeing her, he said, take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well. And instantly the woman was made well. And when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion, he said, go away, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. But when the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went through all that district. All right. While he was saying these things to them, behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live." Pastor, tell us about this ruler and what we learn about this ruler here in this petition.
The thing that's so interesting is that this ruler is obviously convinced that Jesus can do this. In his statement, you know, the formula that he comes up with is, you know, she's died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live. There's a confidence level there that is remarkable. And we really, unfortunately, from the text, there's no explanation as to how he arrived at this sort of faith. I mean, it's possible that he had heard the works that Jesus was able to do and, you know, had come to the conclusion that Jesus was the answer to this seemingly impossible problem, more than a problem, a personal tragedy. But he comes to Jesus and with this confidence says, "I know that this is what you can do. Lay your hand on her and she will live." And it's just the thing that's striking, I think, is that there's no "if you want to" or, you know, it's not wavering. There's just this strength in the request itself that Jesus honors. I will find that out as the text unfolds, that he does go and do as this man asked.
And Jesus rose and followed him with his disciples. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, "If I only touch his garment, I will be made well." All right. So Jesus does, the ruler asks Jesus to go and to lay his hand on his on the daughter. And so Jesus rises up, followed him with his disciples. While he's on the way, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up thinking, if I only touch his garment, I will be made well.
Once again, we see somebody with a marvelous faith. You know, essentially what she's saying there is that I just need a little bit of Jesus to be made whole. And, you know, commentators like to speculate about her approach here. And there's some very interesting stuff. I mean, one is that she could have been ashamed because of the nature of her affliction, sort of a very personal thing. Also, perhaps because of her gender and the way that the society was at that time, she didn't feel that she deserved to even have an audience with Jesus, but she knew about him, and she, too, believed that he had the power and the ability to help. So if she could just get close enough to touch him, and then that would be enough. And that is really very remarkable. I think that it's interesting to see that in the case of the little girl, who we have just learned is dead, and in the case of this woman, they are both, according to the ceremonial law, ritually unclean. The girl is dead, obviously, so she is unclean. The woman with this discharge of blood would have been sort of perpetually unclean. And in both cases, you know, what Jesus is doing here is pretty radical because he's crossing those lines in order to bring healing into their lives. So I think, you know, Matthew is setting up here, you know, here's a dead girl, and now here's a woman who is not dead yet, but she's slowly dying, perhaps, because of this ongoing physical problem. And what Jesus is up to is giving life back to the dead.
So if I only touch his garment, I will be made well. Jesus turned and seeing her, he said, "Take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well." And instantly the woman was made well. So he turns, he says, "Take heart."
Yeah.
Be cheerful.
Right. Right. And that's a very, it's a tender way of addressing this woman.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Jesus, you know, knew what she was up to, what she wanted. You could certainly read her heart, and he's able to stop what has been happening to her. And you know, Matthew very intentionally says, instantly the woman was made well. And it's not sort of a gradual things getting better. It's instantaneously Jesus reverses this, this sign of death in this woman's body, and does so out of a sense of tenderness. He's reacting to her faith that she has demonstrated. And later on in this passage, we're going to see sort of the wellspring of that tenderness is this great compassion that Jesus has for his suffering creation.
When he says, your faith has made you well, and instantly the woman was made well, what do we see here? He speaks and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens when God speaks, when Jesus speaks?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a very rich question. The simple answer is when Jesus speaks, things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this traces back, really, if you want to go there, all the way to creation itself, where, you know, the Father speaks, and John tells us that Jesus was the Word that was in the beginning, and the creative power of God is manifest in Christ. So when Jesus walks around in the world that he made and he speaks, it just demonstrates his control over things. In other words, Jesus creates the reality by speaking, and it's just a marvelous thing to see because that's the way he's always operated.
Mm-hmm. Jesus, the Word made flesh. When the Word is spoken, when the Word speaks, there something happens. There's power in God's Word.
Definitely, and that's one of the great applications for us is that as we come into contact with that same Word today, and as we have the privilege of sharing that Word of Christ, things still happen. Sometimes they're not as dramatic as what happens to this woman. Once in a while, we may be blessed with the opportunity to see something that is as dramatic, but much of the time, it's more of an internal thing, but life, being changed utterly by the words of Christ mm-hmm. that fill us up, and then we have the chance to share that word with other people. It's not our word, it's Christ's word.
Verse 23, and when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion, he said, go away, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him, but when the crowd had been put outside, he went in, took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the reports of this went through all the district. So Jesus gets to the ruler's house. He saw the crowd there making a commotion about, I'm sure, about the girl being dead. But he says, go away. She's not dead. She's sleeping.
Yeah, that's such an interesting statement to make. Before we talk about that, I just wanted to point out, it just drew my attention in verse 23 that the commotion and the flute players, I mean, the introduction of that detail, it just says to us that, there is a way in which when death occurs, we have just various, cultural rituals that we do. And I don't know why, but maybe it's because of the funerals that I've done lately, but, when I saw flute players, it just made me think of traditions that we observe, like calling hours and the luncheon after the funeral and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That it's there are rituals that have surrounded this important event in people's lives and the passage of this life from one to another. So you can just imagine, I mean, they have a set of expectations of their own. Nobody ever probably come to a funeral before and said, go away. She's the person who's dead isn't really dead. So when it says they laughed at him, I don't imagine that as a hilarious laughter or a, jovial laughter. It's the laughter that you would laugh at someone who's just said the most inappropriate thing you've ever heard. except Jesus means it, and he's about to raise her. But, those people can't possibly know that that's what's about to happen. Maybe the only person with any sense of that at all is the ruler. He's full of hope, and he's convinced that Jesus can do this. But everybody else is just going through the things that you do when a loved one dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just going through that. So Jesus then says, go away. She's not dead. She's sleeping. She's asleep. Well, so the crowd had been put out. When the crowd had been put out, he went and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. Jesus just takes her by the hand,
mm-hmm.
and she sits up. She gets up. There's the power of the Word made flesh.
Absolutely. And the idea that we get here through these, the miracles that Matthew is reporting and laying on top of each other are all going in the direction here of Jesus' mastery of death itself. And, here there's so much that we could talk about in terms of the resurrection and the idea that where Jesus is, things like demons and illness and death itself cannot stay around. And so he's showing his mastery over death, and certainly with knowing the rest of the story as we do, we can't help but look at that and see, here's just a small preview of what Jesus himself is going to do, so that we can all be in the place of this little girl and being in our connection to Christ, in his word and his touch of our lives. We'll get up from our bed and we'll be physically raised as well.
And the news about this didn't stay quiet. The report of this went through all that district. News spread pretty quickly, it sounds like.
Yes, it did. And, I think the with no internet back then, we know that news travels fast among people, whatever the technology happens to be. So this is not surprising at all. What's interesting also, in a literary sort of way, is that this is something Matthew is repeating. And we're going to hear that same verse essentially in just a couple passages from now when we talk about the blind men. Is the same thing, that with each one of these miracles of healing and restoration of life, the word is going to get out about who Jesus is and what he's able to do. Even when Jesus says, keep it quiet, which he does not do in this case specifically, he'll do that in the next one. But I think that is, it simply is a reasonable reaction, isn't it? Somebody was dead and Jesus came along and raised her. I mean, that's going to get your attention. That word is going to travel very quickly. The problem, if you want to call it that, that it creates for Jesus, when you look at all the Gospels in harmony, is that it almost gets to a point where Jesus can't go anywhere because the word travels fast. Hey, if you've got a loved one or relative with some type of disability or illness, this Jesus of Nazareth can do something about that. So it gets to the point where there's almost literally a crush of people around Jesus, and he has to make the time to go and be by himself and commune with his Father in prayer. And it's understandable because everybody has various needs that they want Jesus to address.
We're studying the Daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Mark Matzke from Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio. We're in Matthew chapter 9. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call or an email, 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727. The email address, kfuo@kfuo.org. We'll be back in just a minute.
Thank you.
You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. We are studying with Pastor Mark Matzke today from Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio. We are in Matthew chapter 9 today, verses 18 through 38. Pastor, are we ready to go on to verse 27?
Sure.
All right, let's take a look at the next section. And as Jesus passed on from there, two blind men followed him, crying aloud, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." When he entered the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus said to them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" They said to him, "Yes, Lord." Then he touched their eyes, saying, "According to your faith, be it done to you." And their eyes were opened, and Jesus sternly warned them, "See that no one knows about it." But they went away and spread his fame through all that district. All right, so Jesus passed on from there. Two blind men followed him, crying aloud, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." Who they call him the Son of David. Why is that?
Well, that's an excellent question. This is really fascinating, and it's not just a little sort of sidebar. And here's one of Jesus' miracles among many. This is really significant because exactly what you identified there, Son of David. And the fact is, this is the first time in Matthew's gospel where anyone calls Jesus by that title. And there is, it's a loaded term. It's meant to identify Jesus with the messianic hopes of Israel and how they arrive. The mystery of this portion of Matthew is, where did this faith come from in these people? Matthew doesn't bother to really tell us in their internal life or what led them to this conclusion. It just says these people came along with a type of faith, reliance, or a trust that Jesus is all these things. And in this case, it's Son of David. And they are the other thing. Now, you want to talk about irony. I mean, here you have two men physically blind, and they're the ones who are identifying Jesus as the Son of David. I mean, they're right. They're absolutely correct. Their conclusion is the right conclusion. How they arrived at that, we don't know, except to say, from our full study of Scripture, that the Spirit was at work in their minds and hearts to grant them that faith. But from a human perspective, it's just rich with paradox here that those without physical sight are able to see the identity of Jesus very clearly and proclaim it. I mean, we get the sense that, they're in the streets. Jesus is passing on, and these men are following him around. He has two blind men following Jesus. He invites them to enter into the house, and it really is remarkable. But I love that image of the so-called blind actually being the people with vision.
He says, yeah, he does use that word, doesn't he? See to it that no one knows about it. So he goes into they go into the house. The blind men came to him. Jesus said to them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" They said to him, "Yes, Lord." What a question. Do you believe that I am able to do this? Mm-hmm. Their response, yes. And then he touched their eyes, saying, "According to your faith, be it done to you." And their eyes were opened.
Yeah. The thing that really, again, it just, you can't help but notice is in their response, the question is an amazing question. Do you believe I'm able to do this? Their response is amazing, too, for two reasons. One is they say yes. The other is that they say Lord. I mean, they've identified Jesus in two ways. One is as Messiah. And when they say yes, Lord, that implies even more. I mean, that implies they are in some way claiming him as the Lord of their own lives. And then in verse 29, he touched their eyes, "According to your faith, be it done to you," and their eyes were opened. And so now, I mean, in one sense, what Jesus is up to is simply bringing their physical state up to par with their spiritual state. They were already seeing from their hearts who Jesus was. Now they have the physical vision to match that. And even though Matthew doesn't tell us that they became sort of part of the wider circle of Jesus' followers. What it does say is that they became kind of evangelists in their area.
They see that no one knows about it. What a But they went away and spread his fame through all the district. You know, it's interesting. Quite often we see that Jesus says, don't tell anybody.
Right.
Now's not the time, don't tell anybody. But what do they do instantly?
Mm-hmm.
Go and tell people.
Yeah, exactly.
Why does Jesus tell them not to not tell anyone and see that no one knows about it? Why does Jesus not want this to spread around just yet?
Yeah, that's a classic conundrum of the Gospels, and it's even gotten labeled over the years, things like the Gospel Secret. You know, why would Jesus want that to be shut down for the time being? Some people have suggested, and I'm not necessarily a proponent of this, but some have suggested that Jesus is the master of reverse psychology. It's just kind of a funny idea. I mean, he's telling them, don't tell them, because he knows that then that will propel them out and tell everybody. I don't think he was up to that per se. What I've heard, and what makes the most sense to me, is that these, again, are the first people to identify Jesus as Son of David and pinning messianic hopes on Jesus. And at that time, of course, there were all sorts of messianic hopes, most of them centering on the idea that the Messiah, when he came, would use his power to drive Rome out and restore Israel to an independent and a very successful nation state, as it was in the days of King David himself. What some have suggested, and what I think is very persuasive, is the idea that Jesus is trying as much as he can to downplay a false interpretation of his ministry. That's something that he battles throughout the Gospels, is the idea of who the people want him to be versus what his mission really was. And we see that in the inner circle of his own disciples. You know, Jesus spells it out for them. It says the Son of Man will have to die and on the third day be raised again. And you recall Peter's response is, that will never happen to you. We won't let that happen. That sounds terrible. Because at that point, I think everybody had different plans for Jesus that had more to do with that sort of kingdom of power approach. And so I don't think Jesus is doing a psychology trick on these guys. I think he really is concerned that people will misinterpret his intentions and his mission. Jesus being Jesus and God being God, he doesn't stop them. He doesn't force them. You know, their decisions are their own. And so they go out telling everybody about what had happened to them. And that's just human nature. I mean, that's the nature of any good news that a person receives, is that you have to go tell somebody else. You need somebody to share it with. And I think here, when you go from not sighted to all of a sudden being able to see everything, number one, you're going to have to explain how that happened to the people who know you. And so it's a very natural thing. So I don't know. The text doesn't really indicate how Jesus felt about that when it happened, but we do know from, you know, the Gospels that it happened on more than one occasion where Jesus would say, keep this under your hat, and people go and do just the opposite. In some ways, that's just the result of receiving. That's the result of coming into a close encounter with Jesus, is that you've got to tell somebody what just happened.
Anything else up through 31 before we go on to the next section, Pastor?
Oh, just to reiterate the idea that verses 26 and 31, are sort of this refrain that is happening, that the miracles that Jesus is performing are being broadcast by people, and it's causing people to know who he is and to be interested in him. The I think what we see is the proclamation of Jesus doing these things has sort of a multiplication effect, where the more people hear about him, the more people come and bring their needs to him and their hurts and their deep disappointments. That is all, in a sense, leading up to what Jesus is going to say at the end of this chapter, which is, I am going to release workers into this harvest field because the harvest is ripe.
Hmm. All right, we'll go on here to the next section. Backing up just a little bit, an email from Carol in St. Charles, Missouri, backing up a little bit to the text on the woman. She says, I think that the woman and the ruler show great faith that Jesus is the Messiah. His touch would either make him unclean, which is impossible for God, or make them clean. Therefore, they would be healed. So the woman and the ruler both show great faith that Jesus truly is the Messiah. Thanks, Carol. Thanks for your email. Well, Pastor, any comments on Carol's email before we go on to the next section here?
No, I think that she's right exactly in what she said. And in the case of the two blind men as well, I mean, Jesus even compliments them, in a sense, on their faith. According to your faith, be it done to you. So he's identifying people with faith, and in a sense, people are self-identifying also. They're responding to Jesus with this great faith, and it is just a wonderful picture that's developing.
All right, let's take a look. Verse 32, as they were going away, behold, a demon-oppressed man who was mute was brought to him, and when the demon had been cast out, the mute man spoke, and the crowds marveled, saying, never was anything like this seen in Israel. But the Pharisees said, he casts out demons by the prince of demons. All right, let's take a look, maybe about a minute and a half for this and a minute and a half for the next paragraph. Sorry, we're running out of time here, Pastor.
All right, that's fine.
So they're going away. Behold, a demon-oppressed man, mute, brought to him. The demon had been cast out. The mute man spoke. Crowds marveled. Never anything like this in Israel. The Pharisees, he cast out demons by the prince of demons, they say.
Yeah. All right. Well, quickly, I mean, in this one little incident, there's really three reactions to Jesus that we see. I mean, number one is the reaction of the mute man. I mean, he's speaking now. Matthew doesn't tell us what he said, but he does say that he spoke. So there's this instant restoration that takes place, and I think he just would have been trying out his ability that he had lost. The second reaction you see is in the case of the crowds, and Matthew tells us that they marveled. They were astonished. You know, this is unprecedented, they say. Which isn't necessarily a faith reaction, but it's a reaction to the miracle itself. And there may be faith mixed in there, but we don't know for sure. However, the last reaction is certainly not a faith reaction. It's a unfaith reaction. It's the Pharisees saying the reason he can do this is that he's of the demons. So it just used to have the snapshot. As Jesus is doing this work of healing and restoration, restoring life where there was death, there's objections to that. And I think that's just instructive to us, even down to the present day, that the world can react to the life-giving presence of Jesus in a disbelieving, anti-Christ sort of way.
All right, let's take a look at verses 35 through 38. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest.
This is really the culmination of everything we've seen so far. All of the people who realize they've come by faith to recognize Jesus has the ability, the power to heal and transform their lives. Jesus is, in a sense, going to need help. And I love that. The metaphor of the great harvest is the harvest itself is plentiful. It's the laborers that we need more of. And so he encourages prayer in the next chapter. He's going to recruit and train and send. The thing that I'm always drawn to is whenever we hear about the compassion of Jesus and how that is truly the source of everything that he's doing in the world, that's also going to be the source of his apostles doing what they do, is this deep gut-level care and concern, sharing in the hurt of the world, and that moving him and moving us as well as Christians to take action, to do something about the suffering that we see.
Pastor, we are just about out of time. What a great study, Matthew chapter 9 today. Thanks so much for being our guest pastor, helping us look at Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 38 today.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's my pleasure.
God bless you and all the saints there at Trinity Lutheran Church in Zanesville, Ohio, as you continue in your ministry there. Thanks be to God for that ministry. Well, coming up in just a little bit, we have, Witness Wednesday. It is Wednesday morning. We'll do a little rewind and visit with Pastor Mark Wood here on his time for Witness Wednesday. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.